in high school, I used SparkNotes all the time to like, you know, get homework done because I wasn't reading the books. And I'd been using Blinkist, and like for the past, it was like year and a half, I would read it every day because like I didn't pay for it, but you get one free book summary every day. So I just read it every day. It'd take like 5 minutes to get through a book. And if you look at my Blinkist, I think I'm up to like over 400 read books. And then I started thinking to myself, what do I remember from all these book summaries I read? And the truth was absolutely nothing.
Welcome to Augzoro, a media platform built to make you think better, ignite conversations, and inspire you to do dope shit. I'm Zach, host of the Augzoro podcast, and I look forward to bringing you along on this journey today. Here are a few things you should know before we start the conversation. Number one, this podcast is a place for me to explore my curiosity and share what I've learned with others. Everyone I speak to on this podcast, whether they're a doctor, designer, music artist, or neuroscientist, is someone who does or makes dope shit. I will never speak to anyone on this podcast who does not truly excite me, whether they have 500 followers or 5 million. Number two, sometimes I get things wrong. There will be times when I listen back to this podcast and think, what a fucking idiot, or how could you say that? And that's okay. You're free to agree with what I say, disagree with what I say, or anything in between. By choosing to record my journey, I accept whatever reactions may come with it. All I ask is that if you hear something on this podcast you don't like or makes you uncomfortable, get fascinated before you get defensive. And number three, the best thing you can do to help this podcast grow is to share it with three other people and tag us on social media. If you feel inspired, pick out a quote to share on Instagram, write a blog post about the podcast on Medium, or record a video about the podcast on TikTok. Make sure you tag @Augzoro on all platforms so that we can respond to you. The best way to spread love is to share what you love. So if this podcast has moved you in any way, we appreciate you spreading the word about Augzoro. Today, I sit down with Alex of Alex and Books. Alex and Books is a platform built to make you read better and live better. I personally live better and read better because of Alex and his platform, which you'll hear more about on the podcast. And I encourage you to go to alexandbooks.com and press start here. Throughout his site, Alex shares book recommendations, summaries, and reading tips from 130 plus books. He also has a great podcast called The Reader's Journey, where he interviews authors like Morgan Housel, James Altucher, and Anne Bogle. So far, my favorite episode is the one with James Altucher, which includes a great segment on how to find your passion. On this episode of the Augzoro podcast, Alex and I discuss how a separated shoulder sparked the Alex and Books platform, how to minimize distraction, why books should come with trailers just like movies, and more. Without further ado, please enjoy this deep dive with Alex of Alex and Books. So I think a good place to start this conversation is something that we spoke about on the phone with your bike accident. And this is actually the first article on your website that I came across. And at the time, it said it had over 200,000 views. So a shit ton of people have read this article, and I'm sure it's grown since then. So for listeners, could you describe what happened with that bike accident and how it served as a spark for Alex and Books?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of sports in general, and I love being outdoors. And we always go during the winter to this mountain to go snowboarding. And we know that they do mountain biking during the summer. And like me and my friend, let's do it. Let's try something new. And it was so much fun just being in nature, just riding down a hill. And it was a great activity. But towards the end of the day, it's really tiring because you're holding on to the brakes because you're literally going down a mountain all the time and your hands get really tired. And there was this ditch and I saw it, but then right after that ditch, there was another ditch, which I didn't see. And it kind of caught me off guard. And then I'm in the air. And since my hands were tired, I let go of the handlebars and the bike just goes flying. I go flying and I roll down the mountain. And then, I stand up and I try to pick up my bike and I couldn't. And there's something wrong with my arms. And then, you know, me and my friend took me to the hospital. I had to go to the emergency room, get like x-rays. And it turns out I basically like separated my shoulder and it was just super painful, but I was just, you know, getting that adrenaline rush. So I wasn't feeling it. And for like the next few months, I had to, you know, I basically couldn't do a lot of the activities that I loved, which was like playing basketball, working out, even going running. And I couldn't even like put on my socks by myself. That's how much like pain I had in my shoulder. And yeah. I had a lot of free time on my hands. And, you know, in the beginning, I just like kind of watched movies and played video games, and which was enjoyable. But then at the end of the day, I'd be like, man, I kind of feel like I'm wasting all this spare time I have. And I've been meaning to start this kind of website because I really got into like reading before the bike accident. And like for several months, I've been meaning to like, you know, I should do something like even start a blog and just share like book recommendations and reading advice. But I kept making excuses. And this is what like Steven Pressfield talks about in the War of Art, where we have a creative project we want to do, but we keep facing this resistance. And like I had all this free time in my hand and I kind of ran out of excuses. So instead of just letting that time go to waste, I'm like, let me use it productively. And that's why I started my own website, alexandbooks.com. And then, you know, as cliche as it sounds, but like sometimes the worst things that ever happened to you, like bike accident, like, you know, basically breaking your shoulder, was actually one of the best things that happened to me, because that led to the beginning of Alex and Books. And since then it's grown tremendously. And it's honestly, you know, I would take that trade any day of the week. Like if I had to break a shoulder to start it again, I'm like, you know, I'll take that deal.
Yeah, yeah. I completely understand that. I had a few elbow surgeries when I was playing baseball down at University of Richmond when I was still in school, and I graduated in 2017. And I went through a similar type thing with a different sort of injury, but the same feeling of boredom. And that initial 2 weeks when I was sitting on the couch, you know, popping pain pills on the senior class schedule, not like so much free time. I wasn't practicing, wasn't working out. I found some things to occupy my mind that were kind of fun, but baseless. It wasn't helping me grow in any way. And then all of a sudden, I remember talking to one of my friends about starting some sort of website where I reached out to music artists and asked them about their lives and wrote articles and eventually morphed into Augzoro and podcasts. But I definitely get the feeling of sitting around with nothing to do. And it's like in that nothingness, you're asking yourself, what do I really want to do with my life? That like that 2 to 3 week period as a couch potato was a blessing, because I actually sat around and thought like, what the fuck do I really want to do with my life? Like my baseball career, like I'm not the same pitcher I used to be. I kind of like talking to people. I like writing. And it sounds like you went through something similar.
Yeah. And I hate to say it again. It's like, so yeah, some of the worst things that ever happened to us, like some of the best things that happened to us. And I think it was like some Steve Jobs quote or something. It's like, you can't look at your life path like going forward, but like looking backwards, you could connect the dots and you could see like, you know, sometimes the bad events led to the good events. And yeah, I think that's what happened in both our cases.
Can you talk about that resistance a little bit that you were talking about in War of Art? Because I actually just picked up the book last night. We didn't plan this. We didn't talk about the War of Art for listeners. I literally picked it up. It was sitting in my bookcase and started reading it. And I got through the parts where he's talking about the resistance and how sometimes in your life, people who are also facing resistance will try to pull you down to your level, like stop chasing your purpose, basically. Can you talk a little bit about what that book meant to you and what you took from it?
Sure. So, well, it's a fantastic read and it's also super short. So I recommend it, like everyone to get it. But really, like in any creative project, it's really funny how the biggest hurdle is actually like a mental hurdle and not a physical one. And I've noticed this like in every creative project I've pursued, whether it's like creating the website, it's really not that hard to like, you know, sign up for Squarespace, it's free and you could just kind of move things around and kind of build your website. And same thing when it comes to like writing articles, it's not that hard to open up your computer and start typing. What's hard is to get over that hurdle and say, I'm a writer or I'm a blogger or I'm a podcaster. And that's what like I also tell people, anyone starting a podcast, one of the hardest things is to say, I'm going to be a podcaster. It's not that hard to, you know, call people up or email them and be like, hey, you want to come on my podcast and talk to them? That comes pretty naturally. The hard part is convincing yourself. And there's something that Steven Pressfield, he calls a resistance. So it's this thing that keeps like pulling you back. It tells you like, no, you can't do this. No, you're not good enough. No, you're not the type of person to do this kind of stuff. And sometimes, well, most of the times it is mental and it's that self-talk in your own head. But other times it's like external. So it's like a lot of people, like when I started Alex and Books, like I'm literally just sharing like book recommendations and book advice. And a couple of friends are like, that's stupid. Don't do that. It's a waste of time. And it's like, I'm trying to do something here. And like all I'm literally doing is like sharing book recommendations. So like nothing super crazy. And it's like, I'm getting resistance from like a couple of close friends, a couple other people that think it's like a silly idea, a waste of time. And then I'm also facing that self-talk, which is probably the hardest thing you have to overcome. And, you know, it's just a great book about if you want to beat that resistance, it's really come down to like taking small steps in the right direction and, you know, believing in yourself. Like half the battle of anything is just believing you can do it. There's that great quote. It's like the man that thinks he can, the man that thinks he can't are both right. So what it comes down to is, you know, believing in yourself and kind of pursuing what you want to do. And like, what's the worst thing that could happen? I start a website and like, it doesn't get any views, or I start a podcast and that not that many people listen to it. It's like, you aren't like physically injured. You're not putting your physical self in like harm's way. It's all mental. And it's like, you just have to get over that hurdle and just start creating.
I heard you say on your episode with James Altucher that with the podcast, you had a plan to start 3 episodes. And then if people liked it, you would continue on from there. And obviously people liked it because I believe you're 14 or 15 in now that you've released. What have you learned as a podcaster since you started that journey a few months ago?
Yeah, so that was also like a big hurdle. And it was mostly mental because I've been working for a podcasting company for almost 2 years. And I've been wanting to start my own podcast for over a year. And I bought the equipment and everything. And they're just sitting there. And like each day I would look at it and be like, I know I want to do this. I know I should do this, but I just couldn't get over that hurdle. And I ended up just, like you said, I emailed 3 people. I'm like, do you want to come on my podcast? And they all said yes. And like, I'm like, all right, well now I can't let them down. I have to figure out how to podcast. I have to figure out how to record, how to edit. So it was like kind of pulling the trigger and then figuring out how to do it. And then like another important lesson I learned is like successful people, like especially like the authors I have on my podcast, they're not jerks and they're not mean. They're just busy. Like I'll email them, be like, hey, you want to come on my podcast? And sometimes they won't reply. And then I have to follow up. I'll email them like, hey, can you come on this podcast? And it takes a while to like figure out their schedule. And, or sometimes it might take them a couple weeks to get back to my email. And like, once they get on the podcast, they all have a great time. They're like, thank you for, you know, reading my book. Thank you for all these great questions. You know, it was a great experience. Happy to talk again anytime. But the thing is, these people are super busy and time is their most limited resource. And that's what you're asking for. So like you have to come prepared and don't get offended if they don't reply to your email. It takes them a while to get back to you. Like these guys are super busy. They're super successful. You probably need them more than they need you. So just don't get mad at them for being busy. They're not jerks. They just, you know, they have a lot of things going on.
Yeah. And you've had some pretty high profile authors on the podcast, like James Altucher, like Morgan Housel, who's a super successful investor, money manager. Do you have any certain language that you use in emails when you're following up with people that you found have made them more likely to respond? For anyone listening who, even if it's not a podcast, if it's you're trying to do some sort of deal with someone, something that you can use to follow up that has helped you gain the attention of these people and then ultimately closing the deal and having them on the podcast?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it comes down to 2 things. It comes down to kindness and value. So like, don't be passive aggressive. Like, hey, you said you were going to come on a podcast. Now you're not responding. Like passive aggressiveness never works. Come out with kindness and assume they are busy. And so like, I'll say like, hey, I'm sure, you know, I think my email got lost in your inbox, or I'm sure you may have missed this. So I just want to bump it up and see like what time would be good for like a podcast. Like, are you free in the next couple of weeks? So that's like one, coming from a good place, coming from kindness, not being like mad at them or angry, because that's not going to work. And 2 is like value. So just restate the value you have to offer. So I'll be like, hey, you know, I know you're busy. I just wanted to share that the podcast is growing and now it's up to like 3,000 downloads an episode instead of 2,000. So, you know, just want to reinstate that I'd be super happy to have you on. And I know you're busy, but I would love to find time to reschedule that. And, you know, hopefully you are growing on like social media or your podcasting downloads are increasing, and just like restate why they should come on your podcast and ask nicely. So really comes down to kindness and value.
Yeah, that's a good point. Passive aggressiveness usually never works. And you're not putting yourself in the other person's shoes if you are being passive aggressive and they're a super busy person, because they may not have time for it, or you may not be showing enough value for where they want to commit an hour and a half to the podcast. Something that's also been helpful to me, I actually got this from the book Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. He recommends if someone gives you a soft yes, or they indicate that they're somewhat interested, but then they kind of drop off the map, to send them a follow-up email saying, have you given up on this project, or have you given up on this podcast? Because it frames the other person as giving up if they don't do it. So it's like, if I don't do this podcast with this person that I initially kind of said I would do, I'm giving up on that person, and no one wants to give up. So I've actually gotten a couple cool podcasts out of that, like 5-minute responses where the person has been like, oh, like, by the way, like, sorry, missed this or whatever. And it's cool how that framing of it actually works to your advantage.
Yeah, totally.
So what do you see as the overarching goal for Alex and Books? If there was something that you wanted website visitors to get, and how you're trying to change people's lives and make them pay attention to, what would you say is your overarching goal for your platform?
Yeah, I'd say it comes down to like 3 things. One, inspiring people to read. So inspiring them to like pick up books and develop like a reading habit. 2 is like teaching them how to optimize that reading habit, because most people don't realize that reading is a skill, just like driving, like playing tennis. And there's things you could do to get better at reading. And the 3rd one is actually applying what you learn to actually get the improvements you want from life. Because a lot of people say like knowledge is power, but that's not true. Knowledge is only potential power, and you need to take action to get like the results you want from life. So like teaching people how to build that reading habit, teaching them how to optimize that reading habit, and then teaching them how to use what they learn to make a difference in their life. So I'd say it comes down to those 3 things.
So I'm kind of going through a transitional phase in my reading habit where I'm kind of trying to be more open about the things that I read and not punish myself for not finishing a book, kind of like how I would listen to a podcast. I don't finish every podcast and I jump around a lot. And a quote that ignited that in me is something that you've mentioned on your platform before, is Naval Ravikant, where he says, read what you love until you love to read. Is there something that's helped you consistently have excitement for reading on a daily basis? Because you do it more than, you know, almost everybody who's a reader on a consistent basis. Your platform is reading. You're constantly surrounded by books. Any tips or mindset that you get into that allows you to be consistently excited by books?
Yeah. So one thing people don't actually realize is that like the first step is actually unlearning a lot of bad reading habits. So you mentioned like sometimes you have this guilt from like dropping a book, but that's only because like I'm working on this article talking about like unlearning all the bad reading habits we picked up from school, actually. Because school teaches us how to read, but it doesn't teach us how to be readers. And those are 2 separate things. Like you could be literate, but you may not like read books. I talked with this to Anne Bogle. She wrote this great book, I'd Rather Be Reading. And she talks about like the book police, that there's no like imaginary police officer coming to like arrest you if you don't read certain books, or if you like quit a book that, you know, even if some people say it's like a bestseller or it's a classic or like must read, like just because a book, other people have enjoyed it, doesn't mean you'll enjoy it. And that's completely okay, because we're all different people and we all find different things interesting. And the key here is to quit books and not quit reading. Because too many people, they get stuck on a book. And this happened to me before too. It's like, hey, this is a great book, you should read it. I'm like, okay, let me check it out. And it's just like, you know, it's like someone pulling your hair while you're reading it. It's like, you know, it's like painful. And that's the thing. If you're reading and you're not enjoying it, you're basically just going to drop reading altogether, which is like terrible. It's like, it's much better to drop a book than to drop the entire reading habit. And when it comes to like finding interesting books, I call it like the 2 C's. So you want to find books that are either cures or curiosity. So cures would be like, I want to, you know, learn better habits. So, you know, maybe quit smoking or drink more water, or start more exercising, like books that cure something that you, a problem you're having. And the second part is curiosity. So jot down all the things you're curious about and just try to find books in those areas, because there are millions of books out there and you're almost guaranteed to find a book on a certain subject. Like one great example I like to share is like one day I saw a video of someone, it was on news of someone escaping North Korea. And I was like, you know, I hear North Korea in the news a lot, and it's like, they're like this hermit kingdom that not that many people have been to. I'm like, let me read a book about someone that has been in North Korea, and this great book called The Aquariums of Pyongyang. And this guy grew up in North Korea and he spent like 10 years in like a labor camp there. And he shares like what the country is actually like. And then he actually escaped North Korea and he went to like, I think it was Japan or Singapore. And it's just a fantastic book. And it's like that book really satisfied my curiosity. So yeah, so you want to look for books that either cure a problem you're having or satisfy your curiosity about something. And that way you're always going to be interested in reading something. And if you happen to pick a book that you don't like, it's okay to drop it, move on. You know, if you bought it, return it, or maybe donate it to a friend or like a local bookstore or something. And you just want to make reading enjoyable, because as Naval said, you know, if you read what you love, you'll love to read. And I think that's the secret.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird how when it comes to books, people, or at least I do, I'm sure other people feel it as well, that you have this kind of self-judgment where you think because you started a book, you owe it to yourself, or you owe it to some book god to finish the book. But with every other media platform, I don't get that feeling. If I have a movie that's not keeping my attention 20 minutes in, I never think, oh, well, I have to watch the next hour and 20 minutes, or I need to finish the full 4-hour podcast. Like, there's something that some books have that are intangible that keep you excited. And I think it's like when you respect that more and more with whatever content you're consuming, that refuels your excitement for reading.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's like, I think it goes back to like the bad habits we learn from school, where one is like, you don't get to pick your books in school. They're just assigned to you. And people develop this bad habit of being reactive about what books they read and not being proactive. It's like, a friend recommended me a book, so I have to read it. Instead of being like, let me see what I'm interested in and try to find books in those areas. And yeah, and like school, it's like, okay, you're assigned this book and it's like, you have to read it for a class. If you don't read it for a class, you might fail. And you know, that's going to be terrible as well. But like, we're, you know, out of high school, we're out of college. It's like, you are free as a reader. You could read whatever you want. You could quit whatever books you want. Like all the time, like someone said, this is a great reading section about Montague, the famous philosopher. And he had this great section about reading. I didn't read the whole book about him. Like, I'm not interested in like his entire life, but I am really interested in how reading affected his life. So I read like one or two chapters from that book, and like, I haven't touched it since. And it's like, it's okay to treat books. And this is also a great tip from Naval, like treat it as like a blog post. Like, you could read one chapter, you could skip to another chapter. And there's some chapters in a book that like just aren't interested, like, or won't provide value for me. So no point in me reading them. So, you know, you could skim, you could skip chapters. And if the book is just not for you in general, you could, you know, feel free to quit. And like you said, the book gods won't look down upon you if you do.
Yeah, the book gods, infamous book gods. It is true how much school kind of, the forced reading almost kills that excitement in you, because then you learn to read things that aren't exciting. It would be so much cooler if, instead of assigning everyone having to read the same book at the same time, there was just a list of 40 or 50 books that the teacher had, and he or she said, whatever book stands out to you, I don't give a shit, pick one or two and write something on it or present it to the class. And everyone's making presentations on 30 or 40 books. And then you might hear something from someone else's presentation that makes you think, oh, I want to read that now. So it's like you're following your fascination instead of having something dictated to you.
Yeah, totally. That would be amazing. The thing is, like, with the school system, is basically, you know, built like a factory. And it's like, you know, you have assembly line. It's like, this is the book we're all reading for English class. And yeah, I wish it was a lot more personalized. I don't know how to fix that problem, but I think what I'm trying to do is like teach people how to become readers and, you know, kind of teach the things that school hasn't taught them. Like, school taught them how to read, but not how to be a reader. And that's kind of like one of the missions I'm working on.
So in terms of skills for reading, you mentioned one of the the pillars of what you're trying to do is to teach people the skills of better reading. What would be a skill that someone could start implementing today that's underrated that maybe people aren't thinking about, but it would be super easy and make a huge difference in their reading from this day forward if they started doing it right now?
What I hear from a lot of people is that they get often distracted while they're reading. So I kind of went to that extreme where like I try to just remove all my distractions. So like I sold my Xbox, I don't have a TV, and I just kind of went to the extreme and like, let me get rid of everything that was kind of keeping me away from reading. But you don't have to go that extreme. Like a simple thing that I found really fascinating, and I was experimenting with this, is like, how far is my phone away from me while I'm reading? So like I would read with my phone right next to me, and then I would read with the phone in like the next room, and then I would read with the phone like three rooms down. And what I found is that the farther the phone is away from me, the less tempted I am to check it and to like pick it up and get distracted. And this is also what Nir Eyal talks about in his book, Indistractable. And there's actually studies that prove this. It's like the closer your phone is to you, the more of a mental drain it is, because it's like more tempting. It's like that temptation. Yeah. Like, let me check social media. Let me check, you know, my email. And the closer it is, the easier it is to pick it up and just like, let me take a quick look. And then, you know, then you fall down like social media rabbit hole or something. So really like one simple hack is just keeping your phone like two rooms down. Make sure it's like far away from you. You know, turn off notifications, put it on silent, and just spend like, you know, 15 minutes or 30 minutes just reading, just focus on reading. And then say to yourself, if you get that urge to check social media, you know, say, okay, I'm going to check it, but after I'm done reading. And, you know, it's only like 15 minutes of reading. Like nothing's crazy is going to happen. You're not going to miss some, you know, super important phone calls from the president or something. It's like, you know, just get in this habit of having this certain time. I call like book o'clock. Like, you know, if you want to get in shape, you make a schedule for like, you know, meeting with your fitness trainer. Or if you want to meet your friends, it's like you pick a certain time to like meet up with them at a location. But no one makes a specific time for them to read. So like my book o'clock is like 11 p.m. to like 12 p.m. And like during that time, it's like no phones, no laptops, no devices of any kind. Like all I could do in that time is like read or go to bed. And so like just making a specific time to read, I think is super important. And like, it's not that you have lack of time. It's really that it comes down to you have a lack of priorities. So just to like restate, like keep your phone away from you while you're reading and like pick a specific time to read every day and kind of stick to that.
I forget who I heard it from. It was a comparison about bringing your phone to dinner versus having a wheelbarrow full of endless information, which is basically what a phone is. So this person was saying, instead of having a phone in your pocket at dinner, imagine this. Imagine if you went to dinner with a friend and you just brought this giant wheelbarrow full of pages printed out from the internet, all this information that was sitting next to your table, and you could reach for it whenever you wanted. That's basically what a phone is in a super compactable digital form. And I haven't listened to the podcast yet or read Indistractable. Indistractable is not what you want to read. but I will, I will check it out. And I've kind of had that feeling inside me, because for whatever reason, when I put my phone in another room to work, I always close the door, but there's no reason to, but I feel like something's like leaking out of my room, like calling me to my phone, and I'll always put it on my bed, walk into the living room or something and shut the door and be like, all right, I trapped my phone. Like it's not getting out.
Yeah. And James Clear wrote this great book, Atomic Habits, and he calls it like friction. So whatever things you don't want to do, you want to put as much friction between you and that activity as much as possible. Even if it's like the simple thing, like closing the door, it just adds that tiny little bit of work. So you know that like, oh, if I'm going to have to check my phone, I have to get up, I have to open the door, I have to go get my phone. And it just makes like three steps instead of two. So you just want to put as much friction between you and the activity you don't want to do as possible.
Yeah. So the TV brings up something that we may disagree on, which is not having a TV in your living space or apartment. I love watching TV up to a point where I think it's, you know, taking like where I don't feel like a vegetable. And so for me, that's, I actually wrote a rule for myself where I can't watch 30 plus minute TV shows alone. So if I watch an episode and I'm by myself, that's like the cutoff. I'm not going to watch a movie during the week. And right now I'm going through Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I love that show. If anyone's never seen that show, it's great. For you, what made you want to give up your TV rather than try to figure out some way to coincide with it?
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is like, well, every correction is kind of like an overcorrection. So I am realizing that I kind of went too far. And don't get me wrong, like the same thing, like if I'm hanging out with my girlfriend or something, it's like, you know, we could watch Netflix or Hulu or whatever. Like I enjoy like Mandalorian. That's a great show. How I Met Your Mother, great show. And it's not that I'm against like movies or series per se. It's that I was watching TV and it was like the junk TV. It was like the news. It was like, you know, different kind of just random TV channels. And it's just kind of flipping through channels, like spending half an hour, like, let me try to find something good. Now things have completely changed where like you could choose what you want to watch on Netflix or Hulu. And it's like, you have a lot more control over what you're viewing. So I think one of the core problems there was that it was more about cable than like, and like consuming the wrong content. Like I love, you know, classic movies as well. And like, you know, if a movie has a great rating on IMDb, like I want to check it out because there's a lot I could learn from it. So I think I did like overcorrect a bit, but also I was a point at my life where it was kind of like, I just had to quit. Like the same thing with video games. Like I love Call of Duty. I love playing Halo. Like I could play that game for hours and that's what I did. But I knew I was at this point in my life, at this like inflection point where I could continue the path I was going on and I wouldn't be successful or as successful with Alex and books, or it would take me longer to get there. Or I could really drop the things I loved that weren't loving me back in a sense to do things that I did love that would love me back. Like books, you know, I spent so much time with reading and it's paid me back multiple times. But like with video games, I was having a lot of fun and I really loved it, but it wasn't paying me back. I wasn't getting like rewarded for it. Like no one, like, you know, you go out with friends and like you talk with them, like, what'd you do all day? I played video games and like that's the end of the conversation. But you go, what'd you do today? You know, I read this book and like, oh really? Like, tell me about it. What'd you learn? And it's like, I'm actually learning things that I could use to improve in my life. So yeah, I kind of did go to extreme and, you know, I have been reconsidering, maybe I'll get like a TV and just have like maybe Netflix or something on it. So when I have friends over or like a girlfriend comes over, but for now, I think it was the right decision. Like I did have to go kind of like sober up and just quit like all these bad activities. But now that I know how to like control it, and like the great book Indistractable really teaches you how to control like different different technology, so you're in control of it and not technology. So yeah, I think it was a bit extreme, but I think it paid off well.
Yeah, and everyone has their own way of getting on a path to where they feel like they're achieving their goals and setting values for themselves. And I definitely agree with the news thing and the lack of cable, because I don't have cable. I can download apps if I'm watching something like a debate, something like where it's only being streamed on there, but I haven't watched news in forever, unless I'm home with my parents and they have Fox or CNN on and it's just streaming in the background. But most of my, I guess, quote unquote news comes from summarized newsletters. And most days I don't even read the newsletters. It's mostly the newsletters like 321 by James Clear, which I know you've mentioned, or Ryan Holiday has a couple good newsletters, Daily Stoic. So most of the time it's not even news. And I operate under the assumption that if something big happens that I need to know about, someone will tell me. Like I'm going to find out who becomes president. I'm going to find out if there's like a terrorist attack somewhere. Like there's a lot of things that I will find out anyway.
You'll find out the important stuff. And yeah, we're not meant to consume, you know, news 24/7. So yeah, like same thing. Like I get my news from like Twitter or like friends, basically.
Good news sources. Very, the same reliable. Sometimes it feels like more reliable than cable. Something I thought was really different is you tweeted about reading books naked recently. Can you explain for listeners what reading books naked is and how it's made you a better reader?
One example, like I have my 12 Rules for Life book here, And when I say like reading naked, it was like a catchy headline to get people's attention, but it doesn't mean like I take off all my clothes. What I really take off is like the book. Each book has like a book jacket. And what you want to do is like take it off, because it's really just a marketing device to like inform people what the book is about and to grab their attention. But once you read naked, you have so much more room in like the cover to take notes. So it's like, if you take it off, you get like 50% more like room to write and take notes. And it just makes it like easier to read. Before, like I would read and it's like the cover kept getting in the way and kind of made it harder to write. It's also like sometimes harder to carry. Like it's easier just to carry a book without a cover or anything. And also like frees up space in the back. So you can see like I have like two pages of notes here instead of just like one and a half. And it just makes it a lot easier to read. And the cool part is like sometimes authors will, or like publishers, they'll put like little like Easter eggs in the book. So like in the new Matthew McConaughey book, it's like you take off the book and his book is called Green Lights. And the cover of the book is actually like a green light. And on the back is like his signature with a message. And it's just kind of cool to see like the little details the author puts in the book that no one's going to see because they usually don't take off the cover. So yeah, like whenever I start a book and I'm like, oh, I really want to read this book, I'm going to take it seriously, I'll take off the cover. And because I'm more concerned about the inside of the book and what's inside it than, you know, having a cool cover and, you know, maybe reading outside, because that's more like external validation. It's like what I want is I want to learn what the author's lesson and his message and take notes so I could remember it and use it for later. And so that's how you read naked.
So you've gone, it's basically redesigning a book in a way to what you want it to be. That's closer to how you think books should be in order to gain the most information and learn more of them, is to remove the jacket and be able to write on that extra space, which brings up a first principle question, which is, if you had never seen a book before, if books were not a thing, but you wanted to write things down for people to consume, do you have any ideas for how you would design a book from scratch differently than how books are today in order to allow people to do things like write, remember better, you know, check-ins, things like that, and anything? And I know first principle thinking, you know, you got to sit around for hours and hours and just think about stuff. So it's a tough question. Is there anything that you maybe have already thought about? Like if I was designing books, this is what I would add to them or take away from them, things that really you don't need.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. Off the top of my head, I would kind of just share like a few reading tips. It's like, hey, I know you've probably been a reader your whole life, or you know how to read your entire life, but this is like how you read a book. And I would tell them like, this book is probably meant for a lot of people, but it might not be meant for everyone. So if you're not enjoying this book, feel free to quit it or return it. No hard feelings. You know, we can still be friends. Secondly, don't just read this book. Come prepared with like a pen and a highlighter. Reading is an active conversation. It's like going to a lecture. You don't just listen to the professor talk for an hour in class. It's like you take notes, you kind of jot down the important things. So just reminding the reader that this is an active activity. It's not just like sitting down watching a movie or something. Third thing would be, at the end of each chapter, what I would do is I kind of like summarize like, hey, here's like the main takeaways just in case you missed them. And if it's like a self-help book or something like that, it's like, here are a couple action steps you could take. So not just like, here's the information that I'm trying to teach you, but here's how you could start applying that information to get the changes out of your life. So make it a little bit more of a workbook, because so many people, they just read like a self-help book, but they don't take any action and just stays on their shelf. And it's like shelf help instead of self-help. And it's like, what you really want to do is like read the book, learn what it's about, take the lessons from it, and then apply those lessons to get the changes you want out of life. So just kind of guiding people through the process of how to read a book. That's probably how I would redesign or design my own book.
Yeah, that's a good point. Books don't come with directions, and maybe they should. If some little sort of thing, like you said, on the inside that says, you know, here are, I know you've been reading books your whole life, but here are three things that will help you get the most out of this book. And then an after thing where it says, you know, if you've enjoyed this book, if you've gotten to the end, thanks for reading. Here are three more things you can do that are in line with this book, or three more things you can read. And it's giving me an idea for podcasting, because it made me think about, oh, should I, should I make something in the intro where I'm saying, okay, I know you've listened to a million podcasts, but for you to get the most out of this podcast, you can do these three things. You know, if you hear a quote you like, you can tag us on Twitter. You can, if you're a creator, you can turn it into a blog post and make content of your own, like all of this stuff. So maybe content should come with actionable directions for people, which would in turn create more content and people would learn better.
I think that's a great idea. And yeah, like people listen to podcasts all the time, but they don't really like take notes or, you know, jot down what's important or try to write, you know, how they could apply those lessons. And yeah, that's what I've been doing with like books and analysis and books. I'm trying to create like a manual to teach people how to read books. And that's what it all comes down to, like teaching that skill of reading to as many people as possible.
Do you feel like book reading cultivates a community like podcasting? Because I know podcasters will go out of their way to help each other. Do you feel like there's that same aspect with people who are reading books? And because it doesn't, I've never been in a book club and I've never been in a sort of environment where I'm purposely putting myself around other readers intentionally. It's kind of just like I'll read on my own. Do you feel that same sense of community with people who read?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, when I was thinking about building like a social media presence, it's like, you know, I was deciding between like fitness and like books. And the reason I kind of chose books over it, because one is like, there's, you know, fitness is just like pretty much just work out, be healthy, you know, do a fun exercise and you'll be okay. But with books, I want to be surrounded with other people that enjoy reading. And it's like, you look, what are the types of people that like to read books? They usually have a positive mindset. They want to get better. They're big on self-improvement. They're smart. Maybe some of them are already super successful. Those are people I want to hang out with. And those are people I want to be around and track. And that's why I noticed even on Twitter, even today, I got a comment on one of my posts by this author. And like, this is an author of a book that I really enjoyed. And I reached out to him, like, hey, you want to come on my podcast? And like, there's like business executives, there's like authors, and there's like a whole bunch of like super successful people that follow my account to learn from me. And it's like, I love talking to them about books. They enjoy talking about books with me. And they're, yeah, I think like the book community is like one of the best communities out there. Like they're smart, they're kind, they love learning, they love helping each other. And yeah, it's a great community to be part of.
That brings up another good point, is that you should think about what type of people your platform is attracting, which is why it's more valuable to think about what people do or how people spend their time that follow you rather than focus on the number of followers. Because if you have a million followers, but maybe they don't have money to spend, maybe they're 13 years old, or maybe there's something that are not in line with the values that you want from your followers, it may not be useful to you in the future to kind of build a brand and monetize that. But if you have, and Kevin Kelly's talked about this with the 1,000 true followers, like if you have 1,000 followers and, you know, 200 of those are CEOs, or even like 50 of those are CEOs of big companies, that's way more valuable than having 10,000 or 100,000 people that aren't super impactful in what they do, that they're not, you know, denting the earth with what they're doing.
Yeah, totally. And I think a great way to think about it is like, you don't want to have followers, you want to have people that you consider friends. The people that follow me like on Instagram and Twitter, I would want to hang out with them. And even a lot of people have messaged me is like, hey, you know, I'm also in New York City, you know, we should grab a coffee or something or a drink once like COVID is over. I'm like, yeah, I'm super happy to do it, because like you love reading, I love reading. And like there's a lot I could learn from you. There's a lot, you know, you could probably hopefully learn from me. And it's like the people that, you know, are interested in Alex the books or people like I want to personally hang out with. And I've even made a couple like Twitter friends where like, you know, I'll have a Skype call with them or like a Zoom call. And it's like, we'll just spend like an hour talking about like books or like social media or something. You want to have the followers that you would be friends with, that if they stopped you in the street, you would be like, hey, you want to come hang out with me and my friends? Like, let's, you know, just have a good time. That's the type of followers you want to have.
Something that I wanted to get into is the book Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins, because I also read that recently and I saw you had posted about it as well. What's your favorite takeaway from that book? Something that you have consistently thought about since reading, or maybe the biggest way it's changed you since you've put it down?
Yeah, I think one is like, you just have so much untapped potential. It's ridiculous. Like he has that 40% rule. Like you think you're tired. You only have like 60% left in the tank. And it's like something I noticed in myself, like that book was just so motivational for me. Like I started running like every Saturday morning, I would do like 5 miles. And like, I started like kind of during the summer fall. So it was like nice weather. It wasn't too bad. But then like winter came, am I going to give up on this? Like, no, like Goggins wouldn't let me do that. So I would literally wear like sweatpants and like a hoodie and like a mask. And a couple of times it was like snowing or like raining. And I have like one video of me, it's like 20 degrees out and I'm still out there running. And I was posting on Instagram to kind of like be accountable and show people that I'm doing it. And I ended up running like 2 10Ks and just really getting into that habit of running every weekend. And it's just like, you have so much more potential that you don't realize that it's honestly ridiculous. Like you could push yourself so much more in life. And I think everyone that reads that book, they just get super happy, super energetic, and they just like start working out just to begin with. And yeah, like if you want to get in shape, read that book. It'll motivate you more than almost any other book out there.
I know you can't see it, but I literally wrote down the same takeaway from Can't Hurt Me, the 40% rule, in my little notebook for podcasts that I keep. And even when you've reached your absolute limit, you still have 60% left in the tank. And that's something that has also stuck with me. I've just bought a Rogue Fitness wind bike because it provides a lot of value for the price. And it also is small enough where it could fit in a corner of your apartment. And I like doing the short distance intense cardio rather than the running. There have been many moments on that bike where I say, all right, like your energy, your output, which it shows you on the screen, is consistently going down each round. Let's see if you can get it back up over, you know, 800 for this last round. And David Goggins comes to my mind where it's like, all right, like if you're doing this right, you shouldn't, if you have more left in the tank the last round than you did the previous round, then that means you still have more in the tank the previous round. It's like you weren't fully exhausting yourself, which is the whole idea behind the bike. You're going as hard as you can for 10, 15 seconds. So that's been a cool way that I've realized that I have way much more in the tank than I think. The fact that I can push myself past what I was doing the sixth round and the eighth, ninth, and 10th round, simply because I turn on a switch and I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's fucking see if I could beat it. And so it helps me kind of tap into that earlier where I don't have to wait for myself to hit the switch. And it's nothing on the level of David Goggins. It's something that I've hung on to though from the book that has consistently inspired me to go harder in working out or work or anything that requires focus and effort.
Yeah, like anything, like, you know, mental toughness could be applied to everything and not just exercise. And yeah, if you want to get motivated, yeah, read that book.
What are your views on reading fiction? Because I struggle with reading fiction. I watch most of my fiction, movies, TV shows, stuff like that. But for me, there's some sort of block where I think, you know, maybe I'm not getting anything out of this book because it's just a story, which I know isn't true because there are many things that you can get out of fictional stories. For you, how do you view reading fiction as opposed to nonfiction, or is there no real divider for you?
Well, there's definitely a difference. Like 95% or more of my reading is nonfiction, but that doesn't mean I don't love like fiction books. I do love like The Great Gatsby, big fan of Ernest Hemingway, The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, all fantastic books. And it's just figuring out like, what do you want out of your life in this moment? Like it's like fiction books do tend to be a little bit slightly more entertaining and like easier to read than nonfiction books, but that doesn't mean they don't have like lessons in it. And usually the lessons are about people and it's like these timeless lessons that are kind of hidden in the story that you kind of have to look for. And personally, just like where I am at in life right now, I'm focused more on nonfiction books because I want like direct advice on how to improve like certain situations. And it's also easier to share advice from a book that's nonfiction and actually literally writes out the lessons with other people than it is like a fiction book. But I do have like entire couple, like 20 or 30 fiction books that I'm like, I want to read these books. And these are the books, I don't know when I'm going to read them in my lifetime, but I know I am going to read them. And I just have like this bookshelf of fiction books I want to read. And maybe once like Alex and Books is like a whole successful business and I have like a lot more time on my hands, it's like, not only am I going to read nonfiction books, but spend more time reading fiction books. or you could just divide it into like every four like nonfiction books I read, I'm going to read one fiction book. And just like one piece of advice, like if you're having trouble reading a fiction book, I would say start with like short books, because like long books, they're intimidating to even start. Like I picked up a copy of War and Peace. I ordered it on Amazon, and I didn't know how many pages it was. I just knew it was a classic book. You know, people recommended it. It's a Tolstoy. It's like a must read. And then I look at this thing, it's like 1,100, 1,200 pages. So it's like, you kill someone with this book. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to spend so much time reading this thing. And like, I returned it, but I know like in the future, I do want to read that book. And it's just like, it's a matter of when. And yeah, so start with like short books, like The Old Man and the Sea is a great fiction book by Hemingway. And it's like 100 pages, super simple read. You could read that in like a day. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just start with like a short book. And yeah, you can mix it up, fiction and nonfiction, or just like save fiction books for the future. And like, say, you know, make a list of fiction books you want to read. And, you know, just save it for another date.
Yeah, there's so many fiction books like Old Man and the Sea or Great Gatsby that were classic assigned readings in high school that I was not in the right mindset to consume, because I either tried to skim through it as fast as I could and answer the questions for homework, or I read the spark notes, or said I did read it and didn't do it. And just like, all right, like, nothing's going to happen. I'll be able to bullshit the essay. So it would be great to go back and revisit some of those classics and read them because I want to.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point you made, because like when you read a book is just as important as what you read. Like the same thing, like the first time I read Gatsby was a sophomore in high school. And I remember my teacher, like she had an accent, she had a lisp. So it was hard to like even understand what she was saying. And like I was in high school, all I cared about was like video games, been playing basketball. I didn't really care about books. And it's like, I didn't understand the value of the Great Gatsby, the message behind it. And then a couple of years later, later in college, it's like the movie came out and I really enjoyed the movie. I loved it. You know, let me read the book, the original book. And I just became like fascinated with it. And like since then, I read the book like four or five times. When you read a book is super important, because like you said, your mindset is going to be different. Your experiences are going to be different. And it might be a great book then, and it was a great book then, but I just wasn't ready for that book at that time.
It is true that there was a large portion of my teenage years where I was just not taking in anything that I read. And so you make a great point. When you read it is just as important as what you're reading. Something that I wanted to ask you is more of a prompt, is to get your thoughts on platforms like SparkNotes or Blinkist, or things that basically take down the most important parts of books and spit them out into these 10, 15 minute digestible, either audio or digital pages. What are your views on that? And do you use those for books that you don't want to fully read, but still want to get some information out of?
It's a great question. And one I've actually been meaning to write an article about this. In high school, I used SparkNotes all the time to like, you know, get homework done because I wasn't reading the books. And I've been using Blinkist, and like for the past year and a half, I would read it every day, because like I didn't pay for it, but you get one free book summary every day. So I just read it every day. It takes like 5 minutes to get through a book. And if you look at my Blinkist, I think I'm up to like over 400 read books. And then I started thinking to myself, what do I remember from all these book summaries I read? And the truth was absolutely nothing. And so what I found is like, it's not an information device or not like a memorization advice. The way you use book summaries, you use it in two ways. So one is to know if you'd be interested in a book. So let's say someone recommends like Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. I'm like, you know, sounds interesting. I'm a big Nike fan. Let me check it out. So you look up like a summary on Blinkist, and it kind of gives you the main points. And it's like, oh yeah, I'd be interested to learn like more about entrepreneurship and how you built this entire company. So that's one way to use it. And the second way to use it is like after you read a book, it could serve as the refresher. So you go on Blinkist or like another website to find a book summary. And it's like, yeah, I remember this great book I read. What were kind of the lessons from it? And it's like, you go on the summary, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that point, that point, that point. It's like, oh yeah, that was a great book. And you know, I should probably apply some of those lessons to my life. So you use it as like a filtering process to see if you'd be interested in a book, and then use it as a refresher to kind of remind yourself of the lessons you learned.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost like a trailer for the book. You kind of like how you would watch a trailer for a movie, and then you decide whether or not you want to see it based off this 2 minute cut. And you can go through a Blinkist in 5 minutes and decide whether or not you want to read the book. That's also interesting, because when you buy a book, or at least when I buy books, it's because I have had it recommended to people or by sites like Alex and Books, or just I know there's some general insights or general feeling floating around about the book where it's like, oh, you should check this out. I've heard it. I don't know from who, but I've heard it 100 times. People tell me to read this book, but there's no sort of trailer that you can watch a 2 minute thing where it's like, oh, okay, like I do want to read this book or I don't want to read this book. Nothing that's designed to be like a trailer for books. So that's a good use of Blinkist and things like SparkNotes to just read through, you know, 5 minutes of it or maybe half of it and decide whether you want to go spend the $10 that you, or $15, $20. Cause you do the same thing for a movie, you spend $15 for a movie ticket, see a trailer beforehand, use the Blinkist book or Blinkist audio as a trailer, and then go spend the $15 on the book.
Yeah. It's great advice. Think of book summaries as a trailer. If the trailer or the book summary looks interesting, then get the book. And yeah, it's a great way to use it.
What's something that's misunderstood about reading as a practice for maybe someone who doesn't read consistently, or since they've left the required reading of high school and college, has not read at all? What is something that you find that people consistently misunderstand about the practice of reading that maybe you could correct on this podcast or bring that person back more closely to how you view it?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to like kind of some of the bad reading habits we learn from school. So like in school, you get assigned the books and, you know, it's a reactive process instead of proactive. So you're not choosing the books you want to read. And then also like in school, since you don't own the books and it's like school's property, they tell you not to write in or anything, which is like a terrible thing. Well, it's like makes sense because it's school's property and not your book. But if you buy a book, you own that piece of property. You can do with that book whatever you want. It's like, if you, like we said, if you want to read naked, you could read naked. And the thing is like too many people, they just read a book and they believe because they are reading it, they consume or they're absorbing all the information in it. And that's just not true. And like one great tip and like an easy tip to do is just to take notes while you're reading. So, you know, if you see something interesting, like highlight it or like put a little star next to it. And then what I like to do is kind of create like my own table of contents where like in the front cover, like let's say I find a great quote on page 5, I'll write page 5, great quote about habits. Or like there's this great section of the book that I want to remember for later. It's like reread this section. It's like for a future time or something. And just making reading an active process instead of a passive one. Like it's great that you're reading books, but get involved with the process of reading. Like if the author writes something you don't believe with, or maybe you read a different book that it might be false, it's like put a question mark next to it, or put it like may not be true. Or one big thing I like to do is like when I'm reading a book, I try to think, where have I seen this lesson before? Like James Altucher in his book Choose Yourself, he talks about taking full responsibility of your actions. I'm like, oh, that's a Jocko Willink, Extreme Ownership. And like, there's a lot of these timeless lessons in life that authors have got to through different paths, but usually the end lesson is the same. So it's also a great way to like, it's like mind mapping your learning. So like, where have I seen this idea before? And how does it relate to this other idea? And it's a great way to help you remember what you learn. And yeah, just getting involved in your reading, something as simple as writing in your books is going to be a game changer for you. And also serves as something you could always go back to. Like I could get a book off my shelf, I could open up the front cover and I could see like, boom, boom, boom. These are the important parts of it. And like, if I need to, I could find it. So it's just a great reference tool as well.
I like that question that you ask yourself, where have you learned this lesson before? Because like you said, with James Altucher about choosing yourself, that's something that Jocko preaches as well. The discipline equals freedom. And by mentioning that, you may also spark another interesting memory in that person's life where the podcast guest says, oh, I actually heard that from my dad 30 years ago with this experience. And that's the first time I heard that lesson in addition to Jocko. So that's kind of a good open-ended thing to ask yourself, but then also the guest.
Yeah, totally.
I wanted to get into your your social media following a little bit, because it's very impressive. And I admire what you've built with not only the content about Alex and books, but the audience that you have as well following you. And when I last checked, I believe is over 60,000 on Instagram and over 14,000 on Twitter. And I saw you recently made a TikTok as well, which I'm still kind of, I'm figuring out the wild, wild west of TikTok too. Let's start with Twitter, because Twitter and Instagram are so different. What advice would you have for listeners that are interested in building a stronger Twitter following and getting people engaged in what they're saying and writing about? Because people who follow you definitely hang on what you say and what you tweet, and you get an active discussion, not just you tweeting out things into the ether and people liking it and retweeting it. You often get people replying and giving their own thoughts.
What I like to say is, like, each social media platform is like its own country. Like, the people are different in each country. The users are different in each country. The way people, you know, maybe eat food or like just physical customs might be different in country. And the way people consume content on each social media platform is going to be different. So you kind of have to learn like the language of that platform. And like for Twitter, for example, if you're like a new like user and you don't have that many followers, it doesn't make sense for you to like tweet things all the time, because even if you get a retweet or a like, it's like, you know, 10 people will see it. Like, if you're a small user, what you want to do is find people in your niche that are a lot bigger than you and like comment on them. And that way you'll get more exposure. Like, whenever like Naval or James Clear writes something, I usually comment on it. And because they have like millions of followers, I'm more likely to get views. And if people find my comment interesting, and that's another thing, you have to provide value. So you can't just go on Naval's Twitter and write, "Hey, everyone follow me." Like, that's not going to work. He'll say something about books and I'll say something like similar, or say like, "Yeah, I call this rule this," or like, "This is how I view that rule." And then people like comment on my comment, or they're like, "Okay, who's this guy?" And they'll click on my link. And then that way you'll gain followers. And with Twitter, especially, a great way to gain followers once you have decent following is to create like high value Twitter threads. Like, you would think on the internet, everyone just wants like a quick bite and they just want to consume content quickly. But on Twitter, people, they're readers. Like, on Instagram, they just want to see a picture and just go to the next thing. On Twitter, they'll actually read what you write. So if you write an interesting tweet, they're like, "Oh, let me see where this goes." And it goes to like another tweet and another tweet and another tweet. And if you provide like a thread of like 20 tweets that are all valuable to someone, it's like, "Okay, this guy wrote something great. You know, he's obviously good at what he does. He knows a thing or two. It's like, let me follow him." And that's like one of the best ways to gain followers. And what I found personally is, like, I shared like my reading process on Twitter, or I'll share like a reading tip, like Read Naked, and people will retweet it and they'll like it, and I'll just gain a ton more followers. And especially on Twitter, what it comes down to is like providing value, and people really want like educational content, especially on Twitter. Like, on TikTok, it might be more entertaining or like a little bit of mix, but on Twitter, people tend to be readers. They tend to be like intellectuals, people with a high net worth, and they want like valuable content. And, you know, If you want to pick a topic or like a niche and stick to it. Like, everyone knows me on Twitter about like the book guy or the reading guy, and they know I'm not going to tweet about sports, even though I love basketball. I'm not going to tweet about, you know, video games, even though I love like Halo and Call of Duty. That's not why people follow me on Twitter. They follow me on Twitter because they want book advice, book recommendations, reading tips, and that's what I provide for them. And that's like how you get like high engagement as well. Another thing would be, you have to learn the Twitter algorithm, like any social media platform has its own algorithm, just like any country has its own laws. And if you violate that law, they will punish you. So for Twitter, if you post like a link on the very first tweet, you look at Tim Ferriss, he has like a million plus followers, and he always posts like the link to his podcast, and he'll get like 10 or 15 likes because he's moving people away from the platform, and the platform doesn't want that. And so what you want to do is like create maybe like a mini thread, and then add a link to your podcast or your article or whatever it is at the bottom of it. So that way, you know, Twitter doesn't punish you as much. So you have to think like the platform. And, you know, most platforms want you to stay on the platform. Like, even Instagram, if you click a link, you know, a little browser opens up, but you're still in the Instagram app itself. It doesn't take you to Safari or somewhere else. So really understand how the platform works, what they want, and then kind of tailor your content towards it and try to understand the invisible rules of that platform.
I was actually going through your Twitter last week to prepare for this podcast. And while I was doing it, I stole the kind of template that you use for your Twitter threads. And I started incorporating it into my own, where you'll have an introduction where something like, this is the book that changed Matthew McConaughey's life, which was from a recent podcast on Tim Ferriss, Joe Rogan, because I know he's been on a bunch recently. And then you'll have a picture, and then you'll let people know that it's a thread. And then you have the link usually towards the end, but you give a lot of information, 3 takeaways, 5 takeaways, whatever it is. And I like that a lot. So I started doing it on Twitter, which is a platform that I kind of disregarded. I built a following of about 1,000 people and then got more interested in Instagram and kind of forgot about Twitter. And only recently did I revisit it. And looking at your Twitter made me realize that with the other podcasts I record, The Aux, where I'm giving daily insights from things I read or podcasts or movies, these 10, 15 minute bite-sized things, my notes that I take for each episode are basically a thread. And so why not take what I write and then use it for a podcast, use it for Twitter, use it for saying a 30-second TikTok, like maximize, take one thing and then use it, tweak it a little bit for each platform. So you're like maximizing the time you're spending for content instead of starting from ground zero and going like, all right, now I have to write all these tweets. Now I have to come up with this caption. Now I have to, you know, come up with a podcast idea. So your Twitter kind of helped that connection form in my mind for my own Twitter, where I'm like, I'm stupid to not be doing this.
So funny you mentioned that, because that's like another great rule. I learned that from like Gary Vee, which you should follow if you want to grow on social media, a lot of great advice. And he talks about like reuse and recycle content. So like just today on Instagram, I created like a carousel of like different tweets. So I basically took like my best tweets from Twitter and created a carousel. So it's like 6 or 7 quotes about reading and tips. And it just did phenomenally, because I know like I'm taking the best content from Twitter and just resharing it on Instagram. And it's literally just a simple, you know, it took like 10, 15 minutes to do it. And, you know, you want to reuse your content and like work smarter, not harder. So you mentioned like TikTok. So like all my Instagram reels, I just re-upload to TikTok. And like on TikTok, I think I have like 1,000 or 2,000 followers. All those followers I got for free. Like I didn't have to do any extra work besides maybe write a caption, which takes like a minute or two. And just if you have great content, figure out how to repurpose it. My own podcast, I'll upload it to YouTube. So that's another way to create content. And then I'll take the YouTube video and I'll make clips of it into like podcast clips. And then I could repost those podcast clips on Instagram or Twitter or like other platforms, and just figure out how to, if you, especially with great pieces of content, you want to figure out how to divide it and share it on different social media platforms. And you don't have to always create something new for each one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Cause a lot of people, including myself, were kind of freaking out about Instagram Reels. Cause it's like, oh, now there has to be like this another silo of content that you have to put out there. And then I realized that people were just uploading their TikToks to Reels, and it doesn't seem like Instagram's algorithm de-boosts the Reel posts in any way. It seemed like they seem to be doing pretty well. And I kind of experimented early on where, okay, if I make a Reel, I repost a TikTok, is it any different? And it looked like it was the same sort of engagement. So that's a good point. You can just repost things, adjust them a little bit, like the captions, and then take advantage of the content.
Yep. We're smarter, not harder.
So this is something that I wanted to ask you about your YouTube channel. So when you first started your channel, you posted a few videos that did really well. I think they had like 6,000 or 7,000 views early on, where it was you're physically on camera talking about a tip for reading or takeaways from a book you read. And then you stopped and mostly were posting podcast content. What was the reason behind stopping the book breakdowns? Because those seem to be doing really well.
Yeah, that's a great insight, man. I haven't talked about this before. But it comes back to creating content. It's like, it really doesn't matter how great the content does if you don't enjoy doing it. So like, I do enjoy talking about books. I do enjoy sharing tips. But just doing all the recording, having like a script ready, and then doing all the editing myself, it was just way too time consuming. And like, I felt like I was spending too much time like editing videos than I did reading. So although the content did do great, and I would like to enjoy it more, like if I was going to do that, I would have to hire like an editor and someone like set up the camera and everything, because there's a lot of like stuff you don't see behind the camera that takes up a lot of time. Meanwhile, with the podcast, I love doing it. You know, I don't mind editing the podcast because, you know, I'm learning while I'm doing it. then I just cut it into clips. And although it's not doing as well as like the other videos I used to do, I enjoy it a lot more. And I think in the long run, it's going to pay off, because let's say I just did like the, you know, book summaries. It was kind of painful to do it, and I would find excuses not to do it, and I would just not enjoy what I was doing. And I think part of if you want to be part of success is being not just successful, but being happy doing it. And, you know, I just realized this is not the path I want to take. I'll do something similar. So I'll do like book summaries on Instagram. I'll do book threads on Twitter. So I'm still sharing a lot of the same information. I'm just creating the content differently. And I'm creating the content in a way I enjoy doing it more. And because I enjoy doing it more, I'm more likely to keep doing it. And if I'm more likely to keep doing it, I have a higher chance of becoming successful. So that was my thinking behind it.
I don't know if you've been using TikTok for FaceTime, like showing your face like you did in those original YouTube posts. For me, at least, that's been a super low effort way to practice talking and editing to the camera that takes 4 or 5 minutes to make a 15, 20 second video. It's like 3 takeaways from the book, bang, bang, bang. Have quotes in there that people have to like rewatch to read the full thing, which gets it like more and more views. That's something that's worked for me. And like you said, you have to enjoy it too. So, and it's more motivation for you to monetize and be able to pay a full-time producer or editor where you can talk into the camera and then pass it off. And you're like, all right, now make this go look like a YouTube video.
Yeah. Definitely trying to play the long-term game here.
Here's a little bit of a devil's advocate question for reading. So, and this is also how I felt when I was probably 21, 22, right, finishing college. There are so many successful people who at least claim not to read that much, or for whatever reason, it got out that this person's like, yeah, I don't read books, or I don't really care about learning new information, and yet they have reached what people would consider successful in that industry. So for someone who sees that and says, okay, what's the point of reading books? Why can't I just focus on the craft that I'm doing, which is painting or podcasting or being a lawyer, and like only maybe reading things that have to do with that specifically that I really need to get to the next level of my career and not necessarily try to expand? What would you say to that person to bring them back to how you view reading more closely?
That's a great question, man. Couple things. One, a lot of those people may just be outliers. Like, luck plays a huge role in success. And yeah, like, you don't have to read books to become successful, but it definitely helps. Because with a book, you're literally taking like an expert, someone who spent like years or decades on a specific topic, and they're sharing all the best like tips and tricks that they know in like this book that's like 200 pages that you could read in like an hour or two. Like with Nir Eyal and his book Indistractable, he spent 5 years studying distractions. Like, I don't have time to do that. I'm not going to, you know, go to Stanford and learn how to, you know, learn all this like psychology and everything, but I could read his book in like a couple hours and learn, you know, maybe the 80-20 rule. It's like I could learn 80% of what he learned in like 20% of the time or even less. So one, it's like books are a shortcut to success. And I think even if people don't read books and they still become successful, I think what you'll see is that they are still learners. So maybe they, you know, read articles, or maybe they watch YouTube videos, or, you know, they listen to podcasts. It's just different forms of learning. Personally, like, I think books are one of the best ways to learn because of how interactive it is too. Like, it's easier to take notes. It's a lot more in-depth information than like a video or like a podcast. You're reading, you're really getting like the cream of the crop of information. And it's just super affordable too. It's like, you know, $10 to learn from like this expert that spent all this time. Maybe you don't need books to become successful, but they definitely help.
Yeah, I guess it's like the running shoes adage where you don't need running shoes to run, but it fucking hurts when you don't.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask what you have on your list to reread on a consistent basis. Because I'm sorting out a few books right now where I want to say, okay, these are 3 or 4 books where I want to make sure I'm going through these every year too. And right now it includes, I'm looking at the stack over there because I pulled them out for this. It includes Models by Mark Manson, which is Attracting Women Through Honesty for Dating Relationships. Because I think there are a lot of things in that book that also apply to business too, like how you carry yourself. Another one is Atomic Habits by James Clear for anything that you do, no matter what path in life. And the last one is how to win friends and influence people. So for you, are there any, do you have any sort of short list where you say to yourself, I need to make sure I go back and at least skim these every year or two to refresh myself? Kind of like your book Bibles, things that you go back to most often.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned those books because those are all books I've read like multiple times because they are incredibly valuable. And yeah, I call it like the book hall of fame. Like what books are like worthy of being read multiple times? For my list, 12 Rules for Life, fantastic book. Another one, Discipline Equals Freedom. And this is another thing, what I like to do, if there's a great book, oftentimes it's like usually a bestseller or sells a lot of copies and they'll do like an updated edition. So I just got the new I got the new Jocko book up there, and it's like the expanded edition of Discipline Equals Freedom. So you're rereading a book, but you're also getting like a bonus to it. So it's like you're getting the three-course meal, but also with a nice dessert to add to it. So that's one of the perks of like rereading a book. Also, sometimes I'll get multiple copies of a book because if I'm rereading it, maybe I missed something. And if I see all my highlights and my notes in it, it's like that's where my attention is going to go and not to like the non-highlighted text. So like the Almanac of Naval have two copies of that. The Creative Curve have two copies of that. Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, I have like four copies of that book. And that's another great book that I'd recommend reading multiple times. So that's like, I think that's a pretty good list.
Do you gift books a lot? Do you gift books to other people?
I let them borrow books, usually try to encourage them to become readers. And I do get a lot of books for free. So I do like book giveaways. You know, I think in the future when I'm more successful, I'll do like more giveaways and gift a lot more books. But I usually tend to like lend people books or just do giveaways and, you know, where they could, you know, just keep that book.
What's something that people would be surprised to learn about you if they only knew you as Alex and Books, they weren't a close friend? What's something that people would be surprised to find out or discover about the man behind Alex and Books?
I think kind of what we mentioned earlier in the conversation, I love like, you know, I love movies. I love video games. I just don't like do them that often. You know, I went to my friend's house a while back and we played Call of Duty. I'm like, yo, this game's so much fun. Like there's a reason I don't have this game because I just be playing it all day. And Halo, like this is a game I actually spent so much hours. I was trying to go become like a professional gamer. But then I realized like, do I really want my life to be playing, you know, video games all day? And this is kind of like my contribution to society is mostly kind of just entertainment. Even though it was so much fun, like I had to like step back from that. But even though I don't play video games, and I love Pokemon, play that my whole life, Nintendo, you know, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, Donkey Kong, Mario Kart, all those games, you know, such a fun time, you know, still enjoy video games to this day. But I think, you know, I had to put that like love for that activity like under control or even just like cap it so I didn't, you know, go overboard into it. If I ever go to my friend's house and he has like classic Mario Kart, you know, we're playing that.
It's funny you mentioned Game Boy and Pokemon. This is a random tangent. I just read an interesting story on how Game Boy was created, and the designer behind Game Boy was sitting on a bus and he saw some guy fascinated by a calculator, just playing with a calculator. And it made him realize that you don't necessarily have to have the highest tech to keep people engaged. You can have something like a Game Boy that started without color before they came out with the Game Boy Color, where it's kind of like you're playing with a calculator, but things are happening on screen. It's not super complicated technology. And that was the impetus for what then became Game Boy and Nintendo and what we know today. And yeah, now things have become way more distracting. So it's I understand the shying away from video games because it's so, even apps on your phone that you're not even watching on a big screen, just looking at your phone can be so addictive where there are a lot of things that I see that are super fun. And I'm also glad that I don't play them at the same time.
I mean, I hate that video games are so much fun, but this like, I think Joe Rogan, he has the same thing on the podcast. He talked about it. Like he had to quit all video games and just sell everything because it was just too much fun. Like he was just playing video games all day and he's like 40 years old. Like he could retire if he wants to and just play video games. Mm-hmm. But he realized like, it's just like too addicting. It's just too much fun. It's like, you know, some people have drug problems. Like, you know, I think video game addiction is just as enticing as drug addiction. It's just, you know, it's just straight dopamine, especially if you're playing with friends.
Yeah.
And you know, that doesn't mean, like we said earlier, don't quit video games altogether necessarily, but like you really have to have it under control and make sure you're managing it and it's not getting in the way of the other important things in your life.
Yeah, that honesty by Joe Rogan made me feel really good, because I know if Joe Rogan can get addicted to something like video games, where he said he was ending podcasts early, like literally he would have guests on the podcast and end it early because he wanted to go back and play video games, or he was missing dinner playing 8 to 10 hours a day, the stand-up comic life where you can wake up at 3, record a podcast, and then you go to the Laugh Factory wherever at 10 o'clock, you can wake up and play video games for the first 5-6 hours of your day. And so when he was talking about video game addiction, I was like, all right, if he had something that bad, that fortunately I have never had an addiction to that level, then that makes me feel better seeing Joe Rogan do what he's done, because then I have no excuse to let something get in my way.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, you just gotta, you know, make sure you manage it and you can still enjoy it. But some people like Joe Rogan and me, we just had to like quit it altogether.
A couple things left that I wanted to get your thoughts on. And I saw you also shared this quote by Lin Yutang on the magic of reading on James Clear's 3-2-1 newsletter, which is where I originally saw it. And I thought it may be good for listeners to hear this quote. And I wanted to get your thoughts on it after I read it. So I'm going to pull it up. So this is by inventor and writer Lin Yutang on the magic of reading. It says, compare the difference between the life of a man who does no reading and that of a man who does. The man who has not the habit of reading is imprisoned in his immediate world in respect to time and space. His life falls into a set routine. He is limited to contact and conversation with a few friends and acquaintances, and he sees only what happens in his immediate neighborhood. From this prison, there is no escape. But the moment he takes up a book, he immediately enters a different world. And if it is a good book, he is immediately put in touch with one of the best talkers of the world. The talker leads him on and carries him into a different country or a different age, or unburdens him to some of his personal regrets, or discusses with him some special line or aspect of life that the reader knows nothing about. An ancient author puts him in communion with a dead spirit of long ago as he reads along. He begins to imagine what the ancient author looked like and what type of person he was. Now to be able to live 2 hours out of 12 in a different world and take one's thoughts off the claims of the immediate present is, of course, a privilege to be envied by people shut up in their bodily prison. What are your thoughts on that quote and the ethereal nature of books, the magical nature of books that are beyond just the words on the pages, the way that they make you feel and can kind of transport you and transform you?
Yeah, I mean, that quote is just spot on about books. And I think you can look at it like two main takeaways. One is like books provide like an escape for the people that can't escape. So if you've never been to like Rome or Paris or anywhere, it's like you can read a book about that place, whether it's like a fiction book or a nonfiction book about it, and you could kind of travel there without ever leaving your feet. I think that's just like super fascinating that you could, you know, escape reality for a little bit, go to another place and just, you know, experience a different world, even if it's temporarily. And I think the second part is like just the educational aspect of books, which is like one of the reasons I got into books, because like, you know, I could try to email James Clear or like James Altucher and be like, hey, can I talk to you? Can I like come over? Can I study from you? And they're going to be like, no, like get away from me. Like, what do you want? But like, if I buy their book, I'm basically spending time with them. I'm learning from them. I'm learning the best things they have to offer for, you know, a couple, you know, 10 bucks and like a few hours. And it's like, I'm getting the best of what they know. They're basically all my mentors. Like they don't realize that James Altucher was my mentor. Jocko, he taught me. Jordan Peterson, all these guys, David Goggins, all these guys mentored me throughout my life. They just don't realize it. You know, that's what books provide you. Like, even if you live in like a remote village, like if you could get access to a book, you have access to that mentor. And it's just like incredibly valuable that, you know, David Goggins doesn't have time to spend, I think his book sold like 1 million or 2 million copies. He's not going to spend like an hour with each person. Like he would be 80 years old by then, but he can write a book and we could all learn from him on our own time. And like, we're still getting access to him like individually. And it's just like we said, books are like a shortcut to experience, a shortcut to knowledge. And like the person that chooses not to take advantage of the power of books, they're really like fooling themselves there. like books have so much value. And I think this is one of the reasons I'm so passionate about books, because you have so much more potential in yourself and books really help unlock that. So it doesn't really matter where you are. It doesn't really matter who you know. If you have access to books, you have access to, like the quote said, the most ancient wisdom, the best thinkers to live throughout society, even the ones that aren't around anymore, that have been dead. You know, Marcus Aurelius, 2,000 years ago, there's no way, you know, I could get access to him, but I can read the book that he wrote. I could study and like learn under him. And, you know, he's taught me a lot in my life, even though he hasn't been around for 2,000 years, but I still consider him like a mentor in my life.
Yeah, that's a great takeaway, that you can spend time with these people and essentially have a conversation with the words that they're writing. Because if you're reading in a way that you've spoken about on your platform, it is like a conversation where you read something in your head and then you have a thought about it and then you write something down, like a question or a statement that maybe you would say to the author if they were saying that to you in person, but you're writing it down because you're going to explore that yourself later or go back through it. And so it allows you to get in the room with these people without paying their, you know, speaking fee or their taking up their time, which in some cases may be even more expensive depending on who it is. So it's kind of like a no-brainer that you would want to take what these people have learned over years and many times decades. Like the author you were of Indistractable, you were speaking about, studied distraction for 5 years, and now you have this condensed version of what it looks like to be distracted. And otherwise you would have had to do that all yourself. So that's a great point about the power of books, that you can get a huge amount of knowledge without having to put in the work it takes to discover and thread out that knowledge yourself.
Yeah, totally agree. Everyone listening, key takeaway, read books.
So something I wanted to leave listeners off on is with an insight into how you choose books to read. So one of the question that you leave guests off with at the end of your podcast is, what are two books that had a major impact on your life and how did they change your life? So what I want to ask you is, what are two books that you're looking forward to reading on your list, and what made you choose those books? What about those books stood out to you where out of the thousands, millions of books that have ever been written, you decided you wanted to make these two go into your mind before you die?
Oh, so like two books I haven't read yet, but I want to?
Yeah, two books you haven't read yet, but you want to read or are on your list. Because to give people an idea of how you choose books and what stood out to you about these books, because the selection process is so huge before you even start reading.
So I call this strategy the breadcrumb strategy. So like Hansel and Gretel, they would follow the breadcrumbs to find like their trail home. But this way you apply it to like the authors you really enjoyed. So if there's an author you really enjoyed and he's like your favorite author, look at what books inspired them. So that's one thing you could do. And also if you have a favorite author, look at what other books they have written. So a great example is I love the book 12 Rules for Life. And I know Jordan Peterson's writing his new book and should be out sometime early next year. And like, I'm pre-ordering that book. As soon as it comes out, I'm dropping everything and reading that book, because 12 Rules for Life, I loved it. I've read it multiple times. And there's like 99% chance that I'm going to love his next book. So that's one thing. And like same thing with Ryan Holiday. He wrote the book, you know, Ego is the Enemy. A couple other books, Trust Me, I'm Lying. And I really love his work in Stoicism. And I have his book, The Lives of the Stoics. So that's another book like high on my to-be-read list. So for anyone, like if you want to figure out what to read next, figure out what have been your favorite books and see if like what other books has that author written. Like I love Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. So I read Discipline Equals Freedom and The Economy of Leadership, and I enjoyed all those other books. And another thing is, look at your favorite author and ask them who's their favorite author or who's their favorite books. And I actually got fortunate. I got to meet Jordan Peterson and ask him like a couple of his favorite books. And he mentioned like The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And like, I got that book, I read it, highly enjoyed it. So because if you relate to an author and you look up to them, chances are you have a lot of similarities and you're going to enjoy who they look up to as well. So it's kind of like following this breadcrumb of like great authors and great books. So that's like a great strategy people could use.
Yeah, that's a good way to figure out which books are maybe in your wheelhouse, the breadcrumb strategy, kind of figuring out who you've enjoyed and what topics that you've been interested in recently. And so the two books that you'd have are Living with the Stoics by Ryan Holiday, the book that you're looking forward to reading, and then whatever Jordan Peterson's next book is titled. Those are the two you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I think his next book is going to be titled 12 More Rules for Life. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it's called.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Alex, for taking the time to hop on the podcast. As I've said, Alex and Books has had an impact on how I consume content and also create content, which I've mentioned on the podcast, especially with Twitter. And so thank you for the platform you've created. Anyone who's listening to this, go check out Alex and Books and click on his link, Start Here, on his website, which is exactly what I did and how I found the bicycle article. For listeners, can you say what your website is, just even if it's obvious, so people know, and then how they can follow you on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok?
Yeah, of course. So if you go on my website, it's alexandbooks.com. So you can find all like my content there. On Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, you could just search for Alex and Books. And yeah, I'll pop up there. And then I also have a podcast called The Reader's Journey with Alex and Books, where I interview like authors that I really enjoyed, like many of my favorite books, and just sharing like the most important lessons from that book with the audience. And I try to keep it short, like, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. So you really, you know, you learn about a great book, you get the lessons from it. So that's where you could find me. And then I'm also working on building a reading course, which is going to be called The Art of Reading. So I'll have that on my website and my social media platforms. So if you're interested in learning how to become a better reader and like a lot of things we talked about today, I'd recommend checking that out as well.
Yeah, that's, if you ever write a book in the future, you'll have to figure out a way to interview yourself on The Reader's Journey. Do like one of those deep fake things where you are the host and the guest.
Like Joe Rogan interviews Joe Rogan, yeah.
Exactly. You'll have to make one of those for Alex and Books. And I'm going to link everything in the podcast description for listeners as well. So thank you, Alex. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. This has been a wonderful conversation. I hope everyone listening, you learned some reading tips, maybe some social media tips as well. And yeah, if you want to talk, just feel free to shoot me a DM. And just thank you so much for having me on the show, man.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Auxoro podcast. To keep up with everything Auxoro, you can follow us at Auxoro on Instagram and TikTok and at Auxoro TV on YouTube. Also, subscribe today to our twice monthly newsletter, The Source, which brings you the most inspiring and underrated books, podcasts, videos, and articles we come across, as well as the latest Auxoro content. Go to auxoro.com/The Source to subscribe. Until next time.